This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Diddy Steaks exhibit Triple X and Merry Freak Off Christmas, everybody. This, as we learned, Sean Combs texts about his crimes in code words. But don't worry, there's no need to call in the code breakers at Bletchley Park. I think I figured it out, Combs. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Draggings, druggings. He beat her to hell and back. Marathon sex sessions. Boom! Tore down the door.
He smacks her in the face, inflicting pain and cruelty as seen out of The Shining.
Nothing more than an animal. We are live outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse. Standing by is Tisa Tells, investigator and commentator star of Tisa Tells on YouTube. Tisa, you've got to explain how the jury reacted when they got to see State's exhibit Triple X, the freak off videos.
The jurors' reaction was the same as the gallery's reaction. When I say they were disgusted, one juror had to look away. Now, mind you, we heard faint moans, faint murmurings, okay? And again, they turned off all audio to the gallery. So the fact it was that loud, but when you see the jurors, some of them were leaned in. One had to turn their head away in disgust. They were up, they were attentive, they were taking notes, and they were puzzled by what they were seeing. I would actually choose the word disgusted. It was a really, really weird moment, but you know what? It had to be done.
You know, I'm very curious. You said some of the jurors looked disgusted. Some of them turned away. I understand that some of them winced, that one juror was looking through their hands. I want to find out, were they male jurors or female jurors that had this reaction?
Well, that's the funny thing. The people, okay, so I'll just break it down, right? The female jurors actually looked away in disgust. Not all, but some looked away in disgust. The males, interesting enough, were leaning forward, wincing, going back, rubbing their heads. It, whatever they were seeing on those screens, because we were not privy, it was shaking everyone. And again, the men had to wince and look away. It was quite a sight to see.
So even though the jurors had a secret screen to look at and they had on earphones, you could still hear the moaning and the groaning from the video in the well, in the audience?
Yes. Now, that was a surprising thing. Clearly, there was something being played that there were no headphones. But in the well, inside the courtroom, we were actually in the courtroom, you could hear faint moaning, faint talking, faint mumbling. Now, when you heard that, just very faintly, combined to when the jurors were leaning in, looking away, wincing, it created just a disgusting scene. Super disgusting. Oddly enough, the person that didn't have headphones and didn't have privy to it was Sean Combs. And oddly enough, he's the one that later on requested that he have access to watch the freak-off tapes in the back.
So what was his response? What can you do? The jury is watching you buck naked, or maybe he had a burqa on, or maybe hearing him directing everybody else about what they should be doing. And they're all looking over at him. What can he do? What did he do?
I'll tell you what he did. He actually looked like he was a little bit proud. It was odd. He got a little step in that. He started moving around. I thought he would be shamed and appalled, or at least sit there and try to look like a puppy dog, even though he probably looked like a rabbit Rottweiler. Instead, he got this confidence to his actions. Nancy, I got to tell you, I was there and I saw him. It seemed like he was proud of what the jurors saw. And I literally sat there and said, he hasn't learned a thing. And if somehow he pulls out a not guilty verdict, he is going to be hell on wheels. Again, it was pride in his movements, not a lick of shame.
Okay, I don't like when you say if he's found not guilty, he's going to be hell on wheels, because I'm totally getting my car bombed. Okay, like Kid Cudi. Yeah, there's no coming back from the itty bitty ditty and the ditty wand. I've got them all here. Yeah, he's going to come after me. So I've got the juror reactions. I've got Sean Combs' reactions. What about his legal team? This is when, for those of you just joining us, States Exhibit Triple X, the freak-off hotel night, king night. There's so many euphemisms for this. Most of us call it sex trafficking caught on video. But what was the defense team doing during it? Act like taking notes furiously, not looking up, saying over and over, this isn't happening, this isn't happening, this is not why I went to law school.
So the defense team, listen, they had their game faces on. Most of them were staring just straight. They were trying, they had their poker faces on. If anything, they looked like they were like, this isn't happening, this isn't happening. Interestingly enough, Brian still was kind of leaned into Diddy. Now, they were not talking, but he was kind of leaned into there. Probably wanted to tell him, when you stop acting so gosh darn proud and just sit there and or look at the ground. But like you said, I know you don't like to hear about the not guilty. I do not think that the jury even has the evidence to even pull out a not guilty verdict. But we did hear that he is manifesting and he's probably doing blood ritual sacrifices on the rats and roaches in his jail cell. So who knows? We will see if manifestation is real, because I am sure he's doing everything he can to manifest a not guilty.
Okay, you know what you just said, Tisa Tales? And Sydney Sumner, you can back me up on this. Tisa Tales, at the get-go, when you said he's doing voodoo rituals, Santeria on the rats and roaches in his jail cell, there is actually evidence that before this trial started, when everything was starting to go down, he did a voodoo ritual. I think it was in Central Park. I'm going to go back to Sydney Sumner on that. Mm. And a bird was involved. You know what? It's going to take more than voodoo rituals to pull this one out of his... you know where. Okay, so I understand what Brian Steele was doing. I know him, not socially, but through practicing. He's a defense attorney when I was prosecuting. He's a great lawyer, okay? Now, I know that he and every member of his defense team has steeled themselves, pardon the pun, against the freak-off videos, okay? I know they've seen it. Steele may look affable, friendly, and he is. He is genuinely affable and friendly, but he's a hard-as-nails trial lawyer. So I know he's watched all of these videos to be prepared not to react in court. That's really hard to do. I've had to do it a million times when a witness would go sideways or something really bad would happen for the state in the court. You have to act like nothing happened. You cannot show any emotion. But still watching all of that, you know, he's a teetotaler, brings his own chicken sandwich every day that he makes at home, drinks nothing but water, that whole thing. So this must have been a shock to the senses for Steele. Okay, what about the state? How did they react? I hope they showed no emotion at all.
The state did what they needed to do. They showed absolutely no reaction at all. They stared forward in steely silence, and they really gave the feeling of, this is what it is, and you guys are going to have to look at the debauchery that this man was proud of. Again, it was a very sobering time. You have the state looking forward sober. You have the jury, like, just disgusted, looking forward, looking away, flinching. You have everybody pretty much acting like you said they should be acting or expected. And then you have Diddy in the middle of it like a rooster, proud of what he's done. That man has not learned a thing.
Okay, now that you said rooster, just in case you think I'm fabricating his whole voodoo ritual, you started this, Tisa Tales, not me. You said it. Straight to Sydney Sumner. Wasn't it something to do with the, I call it the J-Lo shooting, although Jennifer Lopez did not pull the trigger. She just happened to be there. Didn't that voodoo bird ritual have something right before his nightclub shooting trial? What happened, Sydney?
Nancy, it was actually the day the verdict of that trial was read. So Combs was accused of having a gun illegally. He was put on trial. Rapper Shine Barrow claims he's the guy who took the fall for this, but it really was Diddy behind the trigger. And Combs apparently went to Central Park with some kind of religious man who was holding a Bible, burning sage, and asked Combs to release a white dove from a cage. And Diddy's former bodyguard, Gene Deal, claims that when Diddy pulled the bird from the cage and threw it into the air, it didn't fly. It was dead. And later that day, he was acquitted of all charges.
Okay, so the poor bird sacrificed its life in exchange for a not guilty. Okay, Sydney, thank you for that legal update. Okay, back to Teresa Tales outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse, guys. Sean Combs on trial in a multi-count federal indictment, including charges of sex trafficking and RICO, organized crime. Teresa Tales, I understand three videos were played by the prosecution. Three of those were provided by Cassie Ventura, and then there was one that I believe starred the Punisher.
Yes. Yes. Now, we were not privy to who starred in what, but earlier the prosecution did actually say that there was actually, I think, 7 to 9 videos that they actually recovered. Three of them they would actually show in court, and one of them was supposed to feature the Punisher, which is why he was one of the men to actually testify.
Now, you stated that during all of this, Brian Steele kind of leaned over toward Sean Combs, even though they were not talking. Is that correct?
That is correct. He did the lawyer lean over in, almost like he wanted to get his ear.
Okay. Straight out to Greg Morse joining me, veteran trial lawyer, criminal defense attorney at Morse Legal, author of The Untested on Amazon. He is joining us out of the Palm Beach jurisdiction. Morse, when the jury is wincing and hiding behind their hands watching videos of your client, there's really nowhere to hide.
Well, it's not unexpected. The defense was probably on some level bored because they knew this was coming in, but it's just like autopsy photos. It's horrible stuff.
You know
it
what?
Doesn't
Hold
mean
on.
Your client's guilty.
New York control room, I think there's something wrong with my IFB because I'm pretty sure I heard Greg Morse state that while watching a forced orgy where women are wincing and hiding their eyes, that Moore said it was probably boring. So there, I'm not hearing correctly. Could you state whatever
force.
That was you said again?
Sure. You added the word force. So let's talk about the evidence in the case.
Yeah, I did.
They watched a video. All of the videos are introduced, so the jury, when they're deliberating, can watch them all. The defense was ready for this. They knew this was coming in. There's nothing they can do about it. It's a video. Their argument is this is consensual. And you mentioned the Punisher in one of the videos. You better believe, in closing, the defense is going to go back to the Punisher's testimony about how consensual this was with Cassie and how their relationship was fine and nothing forced. So listen, you're asking regular people to watch some pretty aggressive amateur porn. That's always shocking. And, they are going to wince and turn away just like they would if they were watching something like that at home, not in a criminal case. But it doesn't mean he's going to be found guilty of the sex trafficking. It doesn't mean it was forced fraud or coercion. It doesn't mean any of those things. They knew this was coming in and, it is what it is. And Diddy probably wanted to watch it afterwards because the man's in jail. He doesn't see naked women very much, is my guess.
Greg Morse, did you grow up having your mom or dad read you the Aesop's Fables? I guess it's that one where there's the three monkeys sitting there, and one says he sees no evil, the other hears no evil, the other speaks no evil. Okay, because I think you have that syndrome, and I think it's pretty serious. Sydney Sumner, speaking of the Punisher, suggesting or proving that nothing was forced, which one of the sex workers testified that during a freak off, Sean Combs directed Cassie Ventura into the other room, the other bedroom? There's always a suite at the very least. And he could hear a beating going down over her performance in the freak off. She came flying out of that room where she was being beaten and jumped in the sex worker's lap for protection. Now, did I make that up? Or was that part of the testimony?
Nancy, that was actually the very first escort that we heard from, Daniel Phillip. And he testified that Cassie was clearly afraid of Sean Combs. And he wasn't sure the exact details of how much control Combs had over Cassie. But he said it was definitely evident in their interactions.
So during a freak-off, as Greg Moore says, consensual orgy, Combs makes Cassie leave the room, goes in another room, and beats her. I guess she wasn't just wasn't into it enough. And then she goes back in, and again, Sydney, what happened when she went back into the freak-off?
Philip testified that he could hear the sound of Combs hitting Taffy. So didn't see what happened, but he could hear the sound of hands hitting flesh, and he knew that Taffy was being physically assaulted in that room.
You know what, Sydney Sumner? There's so many beatings and so many sex workers. It really is hard to keep it all straight. I just happen to have notes here. You're right. The person's name is Daniel Phillip, a male stripper who took the stand. I believe he was on cross on May 12, according to my notes. And he witnessed Cassie Ventura. He heard Combs yelling at her. There was physical abuse. She ran out of the room. Combs stalked out in a towel. And Cassie, quote, jumped into my lap shaking. And I asked her, why is she doing this? Why is she staying with a guy hitting her and beating her like this? So the sex workers that Morse refers to as being part of a willing and consensual orgy, and that just rolls off his tongue like that's normal. But that said, she came and jumped in a stripper's lap after a beating to go back into the freak-off. You call that consensual, Morse?
It sounds, again, the prosecution's going to focus on that one instance and link it to that video of that horrible abuse that Cassie Ventura suffered in that hotel. However, the defense is going to talk about the testimony, all the other hotel nights and freak-offs. And remember, when the jury gets charged with the jury instructions, one of the things they'll be told is reasonable doubt comes from a conflict in the evidence.
Hotel nights would last up to 30 hours.
The freak-offs weren't just like bam, 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 thank you, ma'am. Positions held for 3-4 hours. Ouch, I'd want to go see the chiropractor, a cracked out Loki in the Marvel Universe.
Hold that position, arch your back. What, breathe in, what? We are live at the Monahan Federal Courthouse where Sean Combs, AKA Diddy, and many other names, is on trial, facing prosecution in a multi-count federal indictment, including charges for sex trafficking and RICO. Joining me at the courthouse, Tisa Tells, investigator and star of Tisa Tells on YouTube. I understand the judge is furious about a leak. A leak, Tisa. What happened?
Guys, what happened in the courtroom today shocked everybody. Judge Aaron is done playing nice. He went in there with his cloak flying behind him like he was Lord Voldemort coming to Hogwarts. He literally accused the defense counsel and a little bit the prosecution, accused them of lying and leaking information that could only been available to the people in a sealed courtroom. It was incredible. On top of that, Diddy's team said that they're going to rest their case in 2 to 5 trial days. I don't even know what that means. However, there was a leak that actually came out from people that were in a closed seal courtroom. The only people there were the defense and the prosecution. The issue was an article. There was an article that was actually published. The judge hinted that it was last night. He didn't tell us what it was. And he said the source of the article had to be one of the parties because, again, it was a closed courtroom. Nobody was supposed to know about it. And it was under federal court ordered. Now, again, the prosecution was like, it's not us, Your Honor. However, the judge literally hammered Mark Agnifilio, the lead counsel for Diddy, saying, when did you find out about this article? Mark Agnifilio sat there, stumbling over his words. Then the judge said, but when were you made aware? He still didn't know. Finally, he said, oh, we think when the prosecution sent it to us. Marie Comey literally looked like, what do you mean we? They were caught flat-footed. They didn't have any excuses. The judge finally said, listen, do you know what's going to happen? Moving forward, first of all, he said he has the right to open up an investigation. He said this is serious. He said moving forward, if this happens again, they will literally seize phones. They will conduct a thorough investigation. They will literally question all parties under penalty of perjury, and they will get to the bottom of those leaks. He said moving forward, though, he is putting the defense and prosecution, but everybody knew he was talking to the defense, on notice that if any leaks come out of their camp, if anything is signed off on and anything escapes, then they are holding the lead prosecutor or defense attorney accountable for anything that happens in their camp. Judge Aaron means business. It was shocking what happened in the courtroom.
Okay, that is serious when there is a leak of that magnitude.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
To Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter who's been covering the case from the very beginning and really before that. Sydney Sumner, sounds like what has just happened in the Koberger prosecution with the Idaho 4 slay out in Moscow, because a leak definitely occurred to Dateline, and they had this very long and extensive piece on the Koberger investigation where evidence came out in the Dateline piece that no one had heard before. Videos of the white Elantra associated with the quadruple murders. Much, much more came out, and that judge ordered a full-on investigation about who is the leak, Sydney.
That's absolutely correct. Judge Stephen Hippler similarly cracked down on both sides of the case to say, hey, I don't know where this came from, but it needs to stop and it can't happen again. Because that Dateline episode, that 2-hour special, it had tons of never before seen evidence down to exactly how many times Koberger allegedly visited the house before the murders, that he made all of these creepy iPhone searches, and that he even had photos of the victim's friends clad in bikinis on his phone. That was all new information, and the judge was not pleased.
Okay, two words come to mind, freaky perv. But that said, the investigation, you do not want to be the source of a leak, and you don't want anybody on your team to be responsible, and that goes right down to the law clerks and the summer interns that may have Xeroxed papers or handed over discovery, because it reflects on you. And once you lose your credibility in the courtroom, technical legal term, you're screwed. End of story. Now, we just heard from Tisa Tales joining us at the courthouse that the defense has now dropped their own bomb, stating they're only going to put up 2 to 5 days of defense witnesses. Straight out to Brian Fitzgibbons joining us, Director of Operations USPA Nationwide Security. He leads a team of investigators. Brian, welcome back. Thank you for being with us. You and I have been in a lot of cases. You as a witness, me as the prosecutor. The defense always does it. Sadly, it took me about 10 years to catch on to it. I would always believe them when they would say, oh, we're going to be at least 2 or 3 weeks. And it never was 2 or 3 weeks. But I would always take them at their word and arrange my rebuttal witnesses to come to town or to show up at the courthouse in 2 or 3 weeks. And then suddenly they go, oh, no, yeah, it's just going to be like 2 days. And it's a way to catch the state flat-footed. But I think it's also, again, pardon the pun, puffing up when you make your case to be more substantial than it really is going to be. Have you ever, and all the times you've testified, Fitzgibbons, seen the defense put on the length of a case they promise up front, ever?
No, I think you make a great point, Nancy, that what the defense is going to do here is, you know, they've used their private investigators and they're going to present a simple, short case to promote reasonable doubt, right? To keep it simple for the jury and point out where there are flaws in the prosecution's case and provide that reasonable doubt.
You know, speaking of the leak, which seems to be taking forefront in the judge's mind right now. Guys, we are live at the courthouse. Sydney Sumner on the case. Did the judge impose a gag order, Sydney?
Yes, at the start of trial, there is a gag order that no one is allowed to violate. Nobody is allowed to be discussing the case outside of court. So this is a problem, and he was livid.
He said, and I quote, this is the judge. He looked over at Agnifilo, the lead defense attorney, and at the state, quote, There is no passing the buck anymore. The buck stops with you. If anything happens, lead counsel is responsible. Ruh-roh. Okay, once you lose your credibility in court, it's over. I don't know if the judge would chew out the attorney that's responsible for the leak in front of the jury. Probably not. No, he wouldn't. He would do it outside the jury's presence because otherwise it could be grounds for a mistrial. Another issue in court, Sidney Sumner, we've already lost juror number 6 because he was less than candid about where he lived. You cannot live outside the jurisdiction and sit on a jury. Now there is an issue with juror number 7. Okay? Now it's my understanding that juror 7 had either received or sent or both texts to a colleague regarding this case. What's the status on that, Sidney Sumner?
Well, what we know about juror number 7 is that they apparently talked about the case improperly with a former colleague, and we don't know too much about what exactly happened, but the judge has pushed off dealing with this issue for a number of days now, but we are expected to have a ruling on it soon.
Another issue in the courtroom is seemingly a missing witness. What happened to Sean Combs' chief of staff, Christina Corum? Is she not going to take the stand? And if not, why not?
Cassie Ventura and Christina Corum's texts are shown to the jury. Cassie texted Corum, WTF, to which Corum asks if Cassie is okay. Cassie writes, no one deserves being dragged by their hair. I locked the door for my safety. Cassie also texts that she doesn't have her belongings or any money, to which Corum says she will try to talk to Combs and help Cassie get her stuff.
The worst Netflix and chill in the world.
200 bottles of baby oil and 900 bottles of Astro Glide.
Hold it right there. Arch your back. Breathe in.
Rhino pills.
He's in control of everything.
Beat her and subjected her to 3 male escorts.
She was the sex slave.
He's asking for his very own Dateline special. I just want to wash my mouth out with Listerine, with Lysol, with rubbing alcohol after I talk about the Sean Combs case. And I suspect some of the jurors feel the same way because when they were watching the state's exhibit Triple X, the freak-off videos, they were actually turning away from the monitor, wincing visibly, hiding their faces. Do you blame them? But now, Merry Freak-off Christmas, everybody.
Special Agent Penland also reads texts from January 2013 where Combs asks Cassie Ventura if she wants to celebrate a late Christmas with a 4-man freak-off. Combs texted Ventura word for word, want to celebrate Christmas and have a freak-off tomorrow or Friday? Ventura then got to work hiring the men with staggered arrivals for January 11th and 12th, reaching out to 3 men personally and arranging for the 4th from an escort service.
Dr. Bethany Marshall, again, I need a shrink and a drink. But since I'm a teetotaler, I'll have to settle for just a shrink. Did you hear that, guys? Bethany Marshall, Dr. Bethany Marshall, joining us out of the LA jurisdiction. She is the author of Deal Breaker. You can see her now on Peacock, and you can find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Did you hear that? Merry Christmas. You want to celebrate a late Christmas with me? With a 4-man freak-off? In other words, you have sex with 4 sex workers?
You know, Nancy, I hear somebody who's compulsive and addicted. In terms of compulsivity, sex addiction, one of the things we know about sex addiction is that the thoughts of sex or whatever the fetishized view of sex is become so prominent in the perpetrator's mind that they often can't focus. Often they can't even hold down a job, or they present as somebody with attention deficit disorder because their mind keeps drifting to sex. And then in terms of addiction, you know, we think of sex as driving these freak-offs, but there's so much drugs involved. And I hear in the testimony that he'll say, you know, I'll be up for 24 hours or 48 hours, or there's some chatter back and forth in the text about that. And to me, Nancy, I think methamphetamine, I mean, that's the one drug that could keep somebody up for that many days. And we know with methamphetamine, especially in homicide, there's often overkill. So if he already likes power and violence and he's on meth, that's even going to ratchet it up a level. And Nancy, real quickly, the jurors wincing. Wincing is an instinctual response to loss of life. It's like seeing a plane fall out of the sky or a big dog barking or a spider or someone ejected from a car. If they are wincing, they're not just viewing sex, they're viewing battery. What is being done to these women? Are they being sodomized? Are they being chained in compromising positions? Are they so out of it they don't know what's happening to them? Are they being whipped? I would be so curious to know, what are they seeing that is life threatening?
The way you just said that, Dr. Bethany, it's overwhelming. It really is. Because those videos are placing the jurors at the freak-offs.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
And Lynn Shaw joining me, founder, director of Lynn's Warriors, an organization committed to ending sex trafficking and sex abuse of women and girls. When I say the words freak off, it's like eating a dirt sandwich. Freak off, hotel night, king night. Wow. That's certainly airbrushing the whole scenario, putting perfume on the pig. It's torture. It's sex abuse. It's coerced rape. Mm-hmm. Freak off? That sounds like it could be a music festival. Hotel night? That sounds like a fun getaway, right? Where the twins and I would camp out on the bed and order room service. Woo! Right? And king night? It's anything but that for the victims.
Has anyone heard of sexual servitude? This is part with the justice system now. We are working into sex trafficking. It is coercion. It is force. It is fraud. Sexual servitude. We've seen the testimony. We've heard they were forced into this. They were under the influence. They were threatened with their lives. Family members were threatened. We've heard so much. This Dirty Diddy Freak Fest is a great big F you, not only to all of us, but to all of the alleged victims of his, and to all of the victims of any sort of sexual exploitation and abuse across America, across the globe. And you know what? This is his playbook. I keep going back to thinking he's smiling. He's thinking he won, because you know what? His playbook is money talks, crime walks. I'm very concerned about this, because we've got to think about, and we're not talking enough about them, the victims. Where is this Christina Corum? I've been asking for weeks now. Is she going to testify? If she is, she isn't. We don't know. Why isn't she testifying? She is the right hand. We have proof. We have text messages. She knew about this. We need more information. But you know what? The women, the bottom line here is all of these alleged victims, survivors of this Dirty Diddy degenerate, their lives will never be the same. We may never know names, hear from them. Their lives are ruined, because you know what? You don't get over abuse like this. But I want everybody to know about sexual servitude equals sex trafficking.
I mean, Greg Morse, when you give your wife a Christmas gift and you say, Merry Christmas, sweetheart. She's probably expecting something like diamond earrings or a bracelet instead of, hey, Merry Christmas. I just ordered 4 male sex workers. Enjoy.
Well, you're right. It's not something I would get as a gift for the significant other in my life. But it doesn't seem like from the text that were read that Cassie rejected it. She went and contacted the 4 men. So while this is overwhelmingly insane to think of the sex acts and this orgy, again, it's not like she said, I don't want to do this. Please stop making me. Let's take a break. Okay, how do I hire the people?
Yeah, you're
so
right. I think she asked for that fat lip and those bruises on the side of her stomach and that gash,
Nancy,
to her forehead. She asked for that.
You're bootstrapping 2 separate crimes.
P. Diddy orchestrates the entire scene.
Vomiting. Forced to have sex with 3 male sex workers.
She turned around and this demon is standing.
18-hour sex marathon on video.
You're not gonna F up my night. He's in control of everything. You better take this effing pill.
Then after that, you better get on your job. That's all it is.
Diddy speaking in code. Wow, it took me a full 5 seconds to crack that. The text messages that he sends all sorts of people include code words. Let's just say You don't need the code breakers at Bletchley Square to figure this out. Listen.
Ananya Sankar reads aloud messages from Combs assistant Ryan Lopez to Christina Corum. LOL, I think I saw one of the Cowboys today. You can spot them in a lobby like an escort. I forgot to tell you about it. Corum texted back four laughing face emojis with, BTW, how long is he going to stay awake? Lopez replies, LOL, I'm guessing until tomorrow night. Cowboys is a possible reference to the Cowboys and Angels service Diddy allegedly used for hotel nights and freak-offs.
Brian Fitzgibbons, really? I mean, dope dealers use code words a lot, and they're always horrible. Here we've got Combs referring to Cowboys. The sex workers work for the Cowboys and Angels sex service, one of the male prostitute services that Combs used. So he would refer to them as cowboys in the code. He also refers to hotel night and freak-offs. I've got a lot more, but how dumb are these people?
Not a very sophisticated code here. As you said, it's not going to require, you know, British intelligence to crack this one, particularly when they have, you know, all the other communications from the Cowboys and Angels agency. So this is just a peek into how unsophisticated their communications were.
You know what? I think it goes a little bit further than that, Fitzgibbons. I think it's arrogance. You are running a criminal enterprise where you have, oh, by the way, Fitzgibbons, let me just throw this in. The fifth person, I think it's five, I'm losing count. Sid, correct me if I'm wrong, has just gotten immunity. It's Brandon Paul, who I think is the drug mule, right? Yeah. I wondered when he got a cheap plea. I'm like, whoa, they got him coming off a plane with a satchel full of dope and he's got a light deal. Why? He must be going to testify. And sure enough, he just got immunity. Speaking of, five minions, as I call them. Some were employees. Some were loosely associated. Like this guy, Brandon Paul, was an employee on the payroll, but he was doing Combs' bidding, carrying his dope, according to prosecutors. Five have taken immunity so far, right? So he's got all of them talking back and forth in code, right? Now, hold on. Here's some more. There he is. What a fine fellow. I hope he can sing really well on the stand. Okay, listen to this, Ms. Gibbons.
The jury has shown texts between Combs staff planning hotel nights, Diddy and Cassie, with Corum and other staff discussing getting $4,000 cash to the hotel. Corum tells assistant Dave Shirley, heads up, he's probably about to do Wild King tonight. Shirley responds, need to re-up on baby oil. The jury also sees a text from Corum to Cassie. Hi, Dave is at your door with the green.
Gee, I wonder what green is, Fitzgibbons. Money?
These texts and this evidence that they're presenting to the jurors is something that we talked about right at the beginning of this case, that the prosecution is going to show the organizational structure and the delegation of tasks coming directly from Diddy. So this is all laying a tremendous foundation for that RICO charge.
Okay, it ain't over yet. Listen to this.
The jury views a series of text messages between Combs and Christina Corum discussing a package that Guido, the drug dealer, drops off for Corum to deal with. In another text thread, Combs' head of security, Fahim Muhammad, gets approval to pay Guido thousands of dollars for drugs, while another text thread, including Combs' accountant, references flower, meaning marijuana. The drug commonly referred to as Molly, MDMA, is also discussed when Corum asked Combs to tell Muhammad what he needs to pick up before his flight to Miami. Combs texts, Molly, 15 pills.
Combs, you're boring me. Throw me a real puzzle here. I mean, Fitzgibbons, marijuana is flower. Molly, okay. They're talking about MDMA. It goes on and on and on. They call the drug dealer Guido. Please stop it. Fitzgibbons, I mean, it's so obvious. But I'm going to go back to Dr. Bethany in just a moment. But I want to hear your take on the codes. And there's so many more. I'm just throwing out a few right now, Fitzgibbons.
I think you made the salient point, Nancy, that this is potentially no code at all. And this is just a display of arrogance that, you know, they felt completely immune to any prosecution.
You know, earlier you said they were just dumb. And then you jumped on it when I said arrogant. Now you're riding that train. Fine, because they're not mutually exclusive. But go ahead, steal my thought. Dr. Bethany Marshall, the arrogance that anybody can figure this out. Like, that's protecting them. It not only is evidence of a crime, it's evidence of trying to cover up the crime. The euphemisms for forced, you heard me right, Morse, forced orgies with male sex workers, referring to dope, drugs as flower and Molly. I mean, there's so many. But the arrogance of it. Hey, nobody's ever going to look at my phone. I'm never going to get in trouble for this. I can do whatever I want with impunity. That's what it's about. And you know what? Wait, he could. Because there was that moment that really struck me when Cassie was getting beaten in front of a group of people and she turned to them with her big fat lip and said, Is nobody seeing this? And apparently, nobody was. Hear no evil. See no evil, speak no evil.
Nancy, he keeps dressing up really perverse, horrible, sadistic crimes as being something better than they are. Oh, it's a hotel night. He does not know that we see in him what is really going on. All this language, not only is it arrogant, it really sanitizes something very, very dark. And you know, one other point, when he went into the other room with Cassie and the sex worker could hear him slapping her, beating her, you know, the panel is talking about this as assault. I thought he was probably trying to get his erection back. I mean, sadism is a key component of his arousal pattern. So what are you going to do if you can't get aroused enough or you've done it too many times in one night? You go beat your girlfriend. You beat them as much as possible and hope other people are listening and that it gets back on track.
And now we remember an American hero, Officer Joseph Burson, Holly Springs PD, just 25, killed in the line of duty, survived by wife Mary Kate. American hero, 25-year-old Joseph Burson. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.